your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first few segments with Jesse Felder, really covering big picture markets, big picture themes. In these segments, we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Also going to be chatting about the Fed and some big picture themes, but then also outlining what is in the CPM Group's Silver Yearbook, which is releasing next week. There is also an event May 10th at 10 a.m. where Jeff is hosting to go over the Silver Yearbook and talk about some of the big picture themes. Jeff, I want to start with the markets and even more importantly, the Fed. The Fed this week came out as expected with a 50 basis point rate hike. Powell pretty much said, look, they're not even talking about a 75 basis point hike, which it seems like the market got a little bit ahead of itself. On the back of that announcement, boy, oh boy, are we seeing some volatility. Jeff, what caught your eye about the Fed policy statement and what Powell had to say in his press conference?
I think that the major thing was, we were completely discounting the idea of a 75 basis point increase. And we were saying, given the low, the negative 1.4% real GDP figure for the first quarter that came out last Friday, and given the increased violence in the Ukraine-Russian war, we thought it might even be possible that they would be more cautious. So I think, our big takeaway is, no, the Fed thinks that the economy is strong enough and that inflation is problematic enough to raise rates 50 basis points, even given that. So that tells us that they think that they can sterilize the inflation that we're seeing in the market over the next, several quarters, the next year or two, without throwing us into a recession, at least in the near future, or triggering a recession. I think that was the big takeaway. And then the follow-up was the very interesting view that the market seemed to have that same interpretation, where they said, okay, the Fed is raising interest rates 50 basis points, but they feel that the economy can handle it. So the economy is stronger than a lot of the doomsayers are saying that it is, and that we're probably not, already, one quarter into a recession. So I think that was the big takeaway for me.
Well, Jeff, that's an interesting point to bring up, because we have heard the word recession showing up more and more in interviews we do, but also in articles that you read online and other people's interviews. It seems like with the slowdown in GDP last quarter, mixed with the high inflation and some market turbulence, I mean, the general markets have been a little weaker in the first quarter and moving into the second quarter, that we're hearing that a lot. But there is that confidence that we're seeing just in the recent past that maybe the Fed can stay the course. I mean, what do you think it would take for the Fed to trigger a recession? What would have to happen? Would inflation not have to come down enough, or would they get a couple more hikes in, maybe midsummer or maybe into the fall, and realize, maybe we've gone too far? What would it take to make the doomsayers correct, let's say?
Yeah, it's funny, because I guess the working title I have right now is that hyperbole has killed more investors than Cecil B. DeMille. If you look at it, there's a lot of yellow journalism abroad, and it's not just the doomsayers, it's also the mainstream press. So, Deutsche Bank came out with a report a couple of weeks ago, and they said, look, we could have a recession starting in 2023. And all of the headlines were, Deutsche Bank sees the recession. And you had to read into the fifth paragraph to say, oh, it might be 12 months from now before you see that one, I do think that, as we've been talking about the probability of a recession sometime a couple years down the road, and we still think it's there. And it's not that the Fed would throw the country into a recession per se, but that economic activity would get to a point where the supply-demand balance is so tight that it could trigger much higher inflation, much higher interest rates, and ultimately a recession. And I think what the Fed is saying is that it's looking at the tightening, and there is a tremendous amount of supply constraints right now. And that's a problem, because that's something that the Fed can't really control. The Fed can raise interest rates, they can suck money out of the economy. All of that's pretty much on the demand side of the economy. But right now, what you're seeing is a combination of very strong demand across segments of the economy, coupled with supply constraints. And the real problem that the Fed is facing is how do you deal with those supply constraints? Because that's nothing that, you know, supply is much less elastic to interest rate changes than is demand. So that's one of the big concerns. And what I think the Fed was saying was, yeah, supply constraints are a problem, but there is enough growth left on the demand side that we don't think that, you know, there'll be a recessionary condition right now. And if you look at what happened in the first quarter, you know, the reality is that consumer demand and some other aspects of business demand were still relatively strong. And what you really saw was a reduction in inventory holdings on the part of business. And that, in fact, that in turn reflected the supply constraints. And it also reflected the fact that the businesses are saying, hey, we're in a tough place here, and we have to be very prudent with our financial resources. So, you know, you put all that together and you say, okay, the Fed's probably thinking that there's more rope to let out in the economy before we hit into more serious constraints on the supply-demand balance that would trigger higher inflation, higher interest rates, and ultimately run a greater risk of a recession.
Really sounds like an almost tightrope walk that the Fed is doing here, trying to control the demand side, but then not having control over the supply side, especially when you consider what's going on in China and really the rest of the world. A lot of supply restrictions and constraints out there. Jeff, what about the reaction in the markets? Because it was one thing that the Fed hasn't been trying to trick investors. They have been pretty upfront and giving a lot of heads up on when they're hiking rates and the process that they're going to be hiking rates. This whole 75 basis point rate hike was really generated by the market and market moves prior to that meeting. That being said, though, boy, oh boy, did we get some volatility on the back of the statement and press conference. Markets went up a lot Wednesday afternoon, and Thursday, as we're recording this, about halfway through the day, boy, oh boy, they've given up all of those gains, and we're seeing pretty much a bloodbath. We see the U.S. dollar up, which is up quite strongly, and yields, 10-year, it's over 3%. So we are seeing a run higher in yields and the U.S. dollar, but we are seeing crashing markets and really every sector being pulled down with it. So what's your takeaway from this market reaction?
First off, I do want to say the Fed's always walking a tightrope. And, you know, the Fed for like more than 20 years, probably close to 40 years, has been saying to the Congress in its Humphrey Hawkins talks and to the administration, we can only do so much with monetary policy. You have to get your fiscal house in order. And in fact, the government has gone the other way, and its fiscal house is in much worse shape now than it ever has been in history. You know, so the Fed's sort of like, you know, the surgeon who's got a patient who says, I take cocaine, I drink like a skunk, and I chain smoke cigarettes, keep me well. You know, and you say, well, you know, I can give you some medicines and I can prescribe, you know, exercise, but you really need to stop smoking, stop drinking so much, and stop taking cocaine. And the federal government says, you know, hey, I'm not paying you to tell me how to live my life. I'm paying you to make me well. And that's sort of where the Fed is, you know, metaphorically. You know, the market reaction was interesting. And I have to say this, yes, the Dow Jones is off 1,000 points right now. It is as low today as it was in March. Let me repeat that. It's as low today as it was in March. Yeah, the reality is that, yes, it's off 1,000 points, but, you know, it also has a lot of scope to go down and also to go back up. So I think that the markets and, you know, the idea that the dollar is up sharply only makes sense given, A, the higher interest rates in the United States relative to everybody else, B, the relatively greater strength in the U.S. economy relative to everybody else. You know, so I think that kind of makes sense. Like I said, you know, one of the big surprises for me was that a 50-point basis increase in interest rates and the associated rhetoric that came with it was enough to cause the markets to sort of say, hey, we're not about to throw ourselves off the abyss into a recession, you know. So that alarmism that you're hearing from the doomsday people is probably a little bit premature, you know. And I think that that's one of the things that you're finding in the markets right now. You know, another thing, point I'd make is, obviously, the Fed watches to see how the markets react to its behavior. But contrary to what some people say, the Fed doesn't, you know, cue off of the stock market. The Fed cues off of the economy. It looks at a tremendous range of economic data, and the Dow Jones and stock market prices are one of the things that it probably pays the least attention to. It's very tuned into the idea that it wants to know how the markets are reacting to its behavior, but it doesn't behave in order to stimulate a certain outcome on the part of the markets. It behaves in order to try to quell inflation and maximize employment. And that's what it's doing right now, as the best as it can, given the fiscal imbalances, a war in which Russia is invading the Ukraine and threatening to broaden it into a nuclear holocaust for the world, COVID coming back, $30 trillion debt built up in the U.S. economy, and a dysfunctional government. You know, so that's where we're at.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of spinning plates in the air that they've got to keep track of. But the Fed's focus really is, like you mentioned, the health of the economy, the labor markets. How is the producers, manufacturers indexes doing? You know, how is the growth of the economy and the GDP? They're looking at all that, not just the stock market. But we have seen some weakness in the general markets, Jeff. And we hear the narrative in the precious metal space that for gold and ultimately maybe silver to get a bid, that we're going to have to see kind of a bifurcation where the markets start to roll over some and then the precious metals markets get a bid. And I know there's differing opinions on that, but what is your thoughts on that? Do we need to see not a crash, but just a rollover in the general markets and more weakness for more generalist investors to maybe go into gold as more of a safe haven play? What's your thought on that?
I'm not quite sure. You know, first off, you know, statistically, it's not necessary to see the stock market fall for investors to turn back to gold and silver. That said, if the stock market did fall 20% or something like that, and, you know, today it's off 2%, 2 or 3%. If the stock market did fall 20% or so, I think that might help stimulate some growth in investment demand for gold and silver, but it's not a prerequisite for it, you know. And quite frankly, you have periods of time where gold and silver investment demand and prices do very well while the stock market is high and rising. Because when the stock market is high and people are, as they are now, very nervous about, you know, a correction or a bear market, which might see a 20% decline, or if you listen to the gold bugs, you know, the end of civilization as we know it, and an 80% decline in the stock market. When people have a lot of money in highly priced stock markets and they're worried about a decline, that oftentimes is a time when they're buying a lot of gold and silver. So, you know, to say that you need to lower stock prices to stimulate investment demand for gold and silver is not actually accurate, because oftentimes what you see is when the stock market moves higher, investors buy more gold and silver because they want to have a certain portion of their portfolio in diversified assets like gold and silver. And as the value of their stock portfolio rises, they need to buy more gold and silver to maintain that portion of their portfolio that's in safe haven assets, if you will.
That is true. Using it as a store of value, right? When you make profits, rotate some of those profits into maybe something a bit safer. The problem is, as we look at the screen, as I said, man, everything is red today. The precious metals were up, but boy, oh boy, the stocks are selling off. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about silver, because as I mentioned, the Silver Yearbook launching next week, May 10th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You have your event to break down what you're seeing in the silver market, your forecast, and this yearbook launch. Can you give us a general overview of, first of all, where you see silver right now and what some of the big themes are around that metal?
I think the biggest thing that we're paying attention to with silver is investment demand, as always, you know. And we saw investment demand rise very sharply from, like, you know, 38 million ounces in 2019 to about 99, 97 million ounces last year. And that has caused the silver price, you know, the average price to go from $16 to $25 last year. And right now, as we're talking, it's about $22.50. So we're basically, we think we're bullish on silver in that we think that the price will move sideways to higher from here over the next, say, six quarters, but trading basically between $21 and, say, $28 over the next year and a half. And then with the potential to rise much more sharply. You know, we're actually looking, you know, based on the first 4 months of this year, we're looking at a slight decline in investment demand for silver. So slightly lower prices possibly on an annual average basis this year compared to where we were last year. But the reality is that, you know, investors have rediscovered silver over the last 3 years. They are buying more silver. They probably will continue to buy silver because it is in a bull market and it seems to have a lot further to go than, say, the stock market.
Well, Jeff, it's interesting that you're focused on the investment demand because, as we've heard for decades, that, you know, the prices are set at the periphery. The prices are set at the margins. And that really comes from the investor demand. But we also hear a secondary narrative that, hey, it's a hybrid metal. It's really an industrial metal now. It's really more of a base metal. It's not money anymore. It was dethroned as money in the 1800s. It's not like gold. It doesn't get the safe haven bid as gold. And so the narrative seems to shift from it's just a poor old industrial metal to no, it really will track gold. It really is money, and it really will be, you know, there really is investment demand. So how do you balance out the narrative with this hybrid metal of silver?
Well, unlike a lot of these guys, I've only been in the silver market since the 1970s. And I have always focused primarily on investment demand as the key factor determining silver prices. Yeah. So it really is. Yeah. Silver investors are the marginal buyers or sellers of silver. And they don't even have to be in the silver market. They can go play in other markets. If you're a fabricator and you're making solar panels or electronics or brazing alloys and solders or jewelry or silverware or mirrors, you know, or photography, you need to use silver and you're going to buy silver. So you're relatively less price elastic than, say, an investor. The same is true on the supply side. So so it's really the investors who are the marginal buyers and sellers of silver, and they're really the guys who sort of set the pace, the timing, and the level of silver price changes. And so it's very important. Now, that said, you know, in gold, you've got maybe, 40 million ounces out of 100 million ounces of newly refined supply that comes into the gold market every year that goes into investment demand. Yeah, right now it's probably closer to 20 million ounces, but it's still, let's say, 20%. In silver, it's a much smaller thing. So you might have, you know, this year we expect silver's total supply from scrap as well as mine production to be just shy of 1 billion ounces. And we expect investment demand to be about 76 million ounces. So investment demand is about 7.5% of total supply in the silver market. So while it is the margin of demand that determines the price, you do have a much more important influence on the price set by fabrication demand. And, you know, in fabrication demand, it's been relatively flat. I mean, we actually saw about a 6% decline in 2000. It came back up about 2% last year, but it didn't get back to the levels that we saw prior to the pandemic and the lockdown. We think it's going to continue to expand this year, but at a relatively modest pace. So we don't see total fabrication demand getting back to 2018, 2019 levels this year, but it's moving in that direction. And one of the big drivers is solar panels. And solar panels are particularly important now because people are trying to get away from fossil fuels. And solar electricity is probably the most cost competitive renewable that's around there right now compared to, say, wind or other forms of renewable energy. So you're going to continue to see strong demand for silver in solar panels. You probably will see a revival in electronics as the economy continues to expand for a while. So we see fabrication demand strong. But again, you know, if you really wanted to, you know, Yeah, it wasn't fabrication demand that drove the gold, the silver price from $16 in 2019 to $20 in 2020 and $25 last year. It was investment demand. In fact, as I just said, you saw fabrication demand falling during that time, partly because the price of silver was rising, but mostly because of the recession in 2020 and the constraints on economic output ever since then. So it's really that investment demand that that you have to pay attention to. Fabrication demand is good. It provides a very solid base for silver, silver demand and silver offtake and silver prices, but it's really the investment demand that drives this car.
So, Jeff, do you agree with the narrative that higher prices lead to higher prices, unlike fabrication demand, where if prices rise too much, we could actually see a slowdown in fabrication? Investment demand, are you on that boat that says higher prices are good to lead to more higher prices?
Up to a certain point. I mean, you know, you'll see investment demand for gold and silver. Investors are like the opposite of price elastic, you know. So they, when the price is falling, they tend not to buy as much. And when the price is rising, they chase the price higher. So as the price has risen, you've seen investment demand increase. And that will continue up to a certain point. But what we've seen over and over again, we saw it in the 1980s, we saw it after 2011, we've seen it in the last couple of years, is when the price of silver gets too high, A, you have any number of investors who are willing to take profits and sell their silver. And B, other investors say, I'm not going to buy at these prices. So there is a price elasticity. And we've seen the price of silver, you know, run up to $50 twice in 1980 and again in 2011. And both times the price of silver came down with a thud. You know, in 1980, the price of silver fell more than 50% in one day. And until 2020, when the oil price fell more than 50% in one day, I had never seen another commodity lose half of its value in one day.
All right, Jeff, we're out of time for this weekend show. Thank you for joining us for the last couple segments there and sharing your thoughts on where the Fed is, where the metals are going, and a little insights into silver. Everybody, thank you for tuning in this weekend. It's been great putting the show together, albeit in a pretty tough market. And I know we're all looking at stocks that continue to sell off, but that seems to be every sector. So something to consider. It's been a bad start to the year for U.S. equity markets. Also a tough start to the year for a number of other sectors. We'll all be back with you early next week. So please keep in touch with Shad and I, Fleck@KEReport.com and Shad@KEReport.com. We love hearing from each and every one of you, and we hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.